and welcome to the Vicar's Watch Dibley,
the podcast where real priests talk about pop culture and what we've learned from faith, life and the church. We've watched Dibley and now we're watching everything else. And today we don't have Kate with us, but we do have Ross. And so I'm talking to Ross about his history, where he's come from, how he came into ordained ministry and the importance of storytelling in his life. Happy hello to you all.
Hello.
We're in our vicarages. You're listening in. We're ready and raring to talk about Ross.
Me?
But first, we should have notices. But we've not got notices, have we, really? Apart from, it's just me and Ross today. Kate's feeling a bit under the weather. So we thought it was well past time for Ross to be interviewed and to hear all about the lovely, lovely Ross. That sound all right?
I'm up for it. It's nice being called lovely. Yeah.
You looked a little bit nervous there. Like I'm going to Jeremy Paxman this.
News night.
News night. Full on. Like, yeah, if you could just get a lamp and shine it right in your face. Like this is an interrogation. Degree. Yeah, that'd be great.
Nah, you can't handle the truth. I don't know.
All those things. So I'm going to ask Ross a bit about his story, but to start off, I thought it'd be nice to do some easy peasy questions to get us going. Does that sound all right?
I'm up for that. Yeah, ready? Bring it on.
Okay. What is your favourite bird?
Oh, you know I like birds. Sparrow. Kingfisher.
Sparrows.
Robin. I like birds, and actually those three birds are very significant to me for all sorts of different reasons, and then they just flew out of my mouth one after the other.
Oh, flew. Nice.
Yeah.
Just sounded like you had bird Tourette's there.
Yeah, no, that does happen to me sometimes, especially when I play the board game Wingspan. Any Wingspan lovers out there, give me a shout out. you've not played Wingspan, have you?
No, I'm going to have to play Wingspan with you.
Yeah,
you
it's really
have
good.
Talked about it more than once, and clearly it's excellent. Okay, so you went for three favourite birds.
Yeah.
Okay, I'll let you as well have then three favourite authors.
Ooh, okay.
I didn't tell Ross these questions beforehand, so he is literally making it up on the spot. If you hadn't already been able to tell by that, Sparrow, Kingfisher.
The first three that popped into my head. Oh, no, they actually didn't know. Okay. I may just end up listing more. Growing up, I loved Brian Jacks and Jacqueline Wilson. They were two excellent authors.
Yes!
The Red Wall series and everything that Jacqueline Wilson wrote.
Yeah.
Growing up, Neil Gaiman and Patrick Rothfuss. Big into like fantasy, science fiction, just kind of really wonderful, weird writing.
Okay.
Most recently, I'm going to do a shout out to some of my friends who are recently published. Cecily Blench, who was a housemate.
Cecily.
Yeah. So my housemate from York, cool. Her second book has just come out. If you're a big fan of historical fiction, then look out for her books. And also my friends Jen and Chris Sugden. They've been writing a podcast for years and years called Victoriosity, and their first book in that world called High Voltage has just been released and is a Sunday Times bestseller and is doing really well.
Yay.
So if you really like Douglas Adams and Terry Pratchett, it's kind of that kind of humour in a clockwork alternative Victorian London. Really
so
good
of
fun.
Like Doctor Who.
Kind of, yeah. There's some Doctor Who vibes going
Clockwork,
on there.
Clockwork, Victorian London. That was all going on.
Yeah.
Ah, so that's cool. And also giving a shout out and a plug to some of your mates who are
absolutely.
Writing books. Very sneaky. Very impressed. So on a kind of fantasy realm, let's carry on with that. And if you were to live in a fictional world, which world would you want to live in?
Oh, wow. As a teenager, I really loved Lord of the Rings. So part of me is thinking it might be fun to be like, to travel around Middle Earth, to spend some time in Rohan, but then like holiday in Gondor, like have a city break there. But for proper retreats, so go to Rivendell. Like
Would you be like a ranger type then, who's just wandering around everywhere?
Yeah, I mean, I think more like Gandalf the Grey, just shows up and everyone knows him and loves him and throws great parties. And I think, you know, Gandalf brings the party. I think I would like to bring the party. To
bring a few fireworks and...
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah,
sounds good.
I think I'm more of a Radagast character, though. Sylvester McCoy with his... on his sled, pulled by... Is it rabbits?
Anyway. He's in the films. Yeah, Radagast the Brown. He's definitely on something.
A bird nest in hair.
Yeah. Oh, yeah, but which bird would it be?
You'd Sparrow! Kingfisher!
Three nests. Amazing. And then one final, supposedly easy question to get you into this. I know you're a fan of the Pokemon.
I'm a big fan of the Pokemon.
And you're wearing a hoodie right now, which has a little sleepy Eevee on it, which is very cute. So, my question to you is, if the hosts of the Vickers Watch Dibbly were Pokemon, you can either assign us a Pokemon or a type. Who would we be?
Okay, that's a really fun question. I think that you'd be a fire or electric type. I think.
Oh, okay. Is that because of my ginger hair?
Not just because of your ginger hair, but you have something kind of punk and rocker about you that I think fits the fire and electric aesthetic. So yeah, I can't think exactly which one you would be though. Maybe like a Growlithe or a Vulpix.
Oh, I know those ones.
You know those ones. They're first gen. Yeah.
Pleased. Yeah. I wear a lot of animal print as well, so Growlithe kind of work.
Kate, I think. I think Kate could be like either Chikorita springs to mind. Like, which is a really sort of cute little grass type Pokemon from Gen 2.
Aww.
Or there's one from Gen, I think it's Gen 6, which is called Kamala, which is like a koala bear Pokemon, and it's sort of hugging a log like it's a cushion, and it gives snuggly vibes, and Kate gives me snuggly vibes.
She's a snuggly. Oh yeah, I've just googled it. Yeah,
there you go.
Kate could be the snuggly little one. Yeah, that's good. And then, what about yourself?
Oh, this is very difficult because I just want to give myself my favorite Pokemon, which
are
isn't
you just
necessarily.
Claiming
your I love Cyndaquil. Cyndaquil's my homeboy. I love myself for Cyndaquil. I also love Furret and Umbreon and Ampharos. For a time, I was thinking I should set up another Twitter account, which is just like Pokemon, and I could call it Ampharos, but R-O-S-S for my name. And
very nice.
Anyway, those are all Gen 2 Pokemon, and I love Johto. I love Gen 2. Those are my,
I could see you as a little Furret.
Yeah,
you're giving me those cute ferret vibes. That's a good one. There's I don't know if I've already sent her, so a bit of context for you. Ross is one of my go-to sending Instagram reels people, and so poor Ross gets in of me sending things. And I don't know if I've sent you this one yet, of a girl who pops up occasionally who is given the name of a Pokemon that she doesn't know and has to draw it.
Yeah.
Without knowing what it looks like.
Yeah, you sent me one of them, I think.
She did one for Furret. Yeah. And it was very close, actually. She did a very good job. Yeah.
Oh, really?
So, I'll add that to my repertoire of reels. that I sent you. Oh, so there's a bit of insight to some of the loves of Ross, but we're going to talk about some other things as well, and I'm sure whatever I've planned to talk about will go on a complete and utter tangent and get totally distracted and end up talking about something else. But we may as well. Oh,
love
yeah,
a tangent.
It's going to be great. We might as well start with one of the reasons. There are many reasons you're on this podcast, but one of the reasons we asked you is because you're ordained and therefore can be a vicar who watched Dibley. So tell me a bit about your story of how you came to wear a dog collar. What sparked that off?
Well, I grew up as a Christian. I also grew up as a writer and story creator, storyteller. And my career plan at about age 9, 10 was to become a best-selling author.
Ooh.
And my mum said, very wise, that's not the most secure of career plans. You should probably have a backup.
Oh.
Have you thought about being a teacher? No, I don't want to be a teacher. Have you thought about being a vicar? No, I don't want to be a vicar. And I remember that conversation. Fast forward a couple of years. Still very much a Christian family. We'd spent some time abroad as a missionary family in Kenya. We came back to Yorkshire for my A-levels. And I was on the school bus. And my friend Sophie, she said, Ross, do you think you're going to be a vicar? Mm. And I said two words to her. The second one was off. So certainly during my A-levels, there was definitely a sense of, no, that is not for me. Absolutely not.
Why?
And I was quite involved with village church stuff. Why don't I want to be... Well, a lot of it was loaded, I think, on the concept of what it meant to be a vicar.
Yeah.
To me, it was caught up in the idea of being trapped somewhere. Mm. For me, this will come out in a bit, but I think there's a big part of me relates to Belle from Beauty and the Beast, where she sings in her reprise, I want adventure in the great wide somewhere. I want it more than I can tell.
Yeah.
And I think my perception of what it meant to be a vicar was to not have adventures, to be static and to never get to go anywhere or do anything exciting.
Yeah.
And that was my perception. So to be a vicar was not on my radar as something fun to do.
Yeah.
Whilst I was at university, I ended up going to a really good church. It took me a while to find a church, a year and a half. But when I did, it was St. Lawrence's in York. Mm-hmm. And the vicar there, Tim Jones, mutual friend of ours, Ruthie.
Indeed.
And I started going to their evening service, and Tim and I walked back in the same direction, and one night walking back, he asked me, have you ever considered ordained ministry?
Mm.
And it was kind of like third strikes and you're out kind of thing. third time lucky. But I also do think it was something about the way that he... I also think it was about the language that he used.
Mm.
The language of ordained ministry hit differently to be a vicar.
Mm.
And the idea, as I would learn, the idea of being set aside to work for the church, to be within the church, but set aside to tell God's story, to love people. And that ultimately made sense to me in the language of priesthood.
Mm.
Being a priest made sense to me because it kind of reflected who I already was. And what I was already doing.
Yeah.
In the way that I related to God, was already writing stories and about God, loving people, caring for people. And actually, off the back of that, it was kind of like, well, actually, I don't know that I want to be beholden to the church, but I want to serve Jesus in the church.
Mm.
And the best way to do that is as a priest. Mm. I think it's been really interesting since then, working out where I fit in the church. And I think there are a couple of people who don't really know where they fit in the church.
Mm.
And it might take them a while, maybe, to find their groove. And maybe that's the whole point. Actually, maybe the whole point is we don't fit in the church. But that is the church. The church is just a whole lot of people who don't fit together, desperately trying to fit together in the name of Christ.
Amen.
Anyway, amen. So Tim told me a little, asked me the question, and all of a sudden I was exploring vocation with lots of other young people around York, including your good self.
Indeed.
Vocations weekends away and retreats. And after I graduated, I stayed in York because it felt like there was this new thing growing and I wanted to honor that. Then, because of various timings and whatnot, I ended up doing a pastoral assistant scheme, which is kind of like a gap year work experience thing in the church. And I did that for St. Matthew's Church, Westminster, in London.
Yeah.
And quite a sort of Anglo-Catholic church with robes and incense and the whole bells and smells vibe. And that was a higher church than I'd ever gone. But still with a good inclusive theology.
Yeah.
And actually that really helped to solidify a lot of my, I don't know, solidify my Christian faith with my identity, as I was beginning to understand who I was as a gay man and gay Christian. But also being rooted in daily prayer and learning the traditions of the church from that sort of high end.
Yeah.
During that year, I went to what was at that time called BAP, Bishop's Advisory Panel, and I was recommended for training, and I was reunited with Ruthie and united with Kate at Cranmer Hall in Durham.
Yeah. What made you decide to go to Durham, other than I'm pretty sure the DDO of York at the time had shares in Cranmer, and that's why so many of us York ordinands ended up there.
I actually didn't end up looking anywhere else. I don't know that I would recommend that to anybody, but for various reasons, I only ever visited Cranmer.
Yeah.
And that was for the interview. A friend of mine had gone there.
Yeah.
And he was a he is a creative Christian as well. He's got a background in clowning, and he said, "Oh, you must go to Cranmer because this lecturer, Kate Bruce, is there. Someone who is delving into imagination and how that relates to preaching and faith and church." So that's why I went to Cranmer, really, because my friend Ned said, "Go be where Kate is."
Ah, there you go. Aww.
Yeah, yeah.
And I'm very glad he said that.
Yeah. Well, it was absolutely the right place for me, even beyond that.
Yeah.
Cranmer was such, whilst we were there, was such a broad community.
Yeah.
In terms of age demographic, ethnicity, churchmanship, theology.
Yeah.
Gender and sexuality. It kind of felt like everything was really broad. And actually, the community didn't feel divided because of it.
Yeah.
It felt richer because of it.
Yeah.
I
came across the picture the other day in the common room where me and you had accidentally completely twinned outfits for the day.
Oh, yeah.
We're both in blue jeans, black tops, and bandanas around our head.
Yeah, that's
yeah, that probably wasn't the first or the last time that happened, that we were almost matching in outfits.
Yeah. Twinsies.
Yes.
Well, I was pulling out recently, you know, unpacking my life, And I've still got the stained glass window that I made for our Reformation yes. Day party.
Oh, such great times.
Anyway.
Well, depends whether you're willing to have this on the podcast about, do you remember, was it Monday nights? And what was even the name of the bar?
Osborne's.
In the Rainbow Rooms. Where
yeah, in the Rainbow Room.
Yeah.
The drag queens, Tess
yeah.
and Emma. Surnames Tickle and Roids.
Where I was oblivious yeah. to my queerness by that point. But it was becoming far more evident. yeah, that was an interesting space to find, wasn't it? And just a release from everything and just going and dancing and to ABBA yeah. and drinking beer.
I remember once, I think it was a Monday night, and then on the Tuesday morning we had a doctrine lecture. And I was incredibly, incredibly hungover.
Me, you and Nat were all and slightly worse for wear.
Hanging. And I had there was a moment where I had to leave the lecture hall just because I needed sugar or water
yeah.
or air. And apparently, because it was a doctrine essay, the lecturer was worried that I'd been terribly offended by
oh, really?
Some kind of heresy. No, mate, oh, no, Paul. No, just desperately hungover. Whoops.
Oopsie.
What happens at college stays at college.
Yeah, yeah.
Or is broadcast on a podcast for all to hear.
You're welcome. So post-college, how did you find Curacy and where you went to go and start your life as a Rev Ross?
Yeah. So sort of against all odds, ended up in Oxford Diocese in the benefice of Whitney.
Mm-hmm.
And they usually don't take outsiders, so it was quite strange that I ended up there. But it felt like a God thing in the end. It was a strong calling, and quite a long process of discernment. I was released from York, which was nice. It freed up a space for Nat.
Yeah, thanks. For that.
You're welcome. And I looked at a couple of places, but then I was abroad for a couple of months. I did an ecumenical placement in Rome.
Oh, yes, I forgot you went to Rome.
How do you? I've been to Rome. Which was fabulous. But then I came back and all of a sudden it was November. I didn't know where I was going.
Yeah.
And I looked at a parish in Manchester Diocese and that wasn't a good fit. And but Whitney in West Oxfordshire came my way and it just felt perfect for me.
Yeah.
I was looking for something that would have the daily office. I wanted to keep morning and evening prayer part of my life. And even though it didn't have certain things, like I thought I wanted a train station and I thought I wanted the traditional Lord's Prayer and I thought I wanted creative city centre. And then God says, no, that's not what you need.
Mm.
Actually, what you need is this guy,
yeah.
My training incumbent called Toby. And it's kind of a terrifying thing to say no to potential futures.
Yeah.
But I'm glad I had the discernment and the courage to do that because I ended up having what felt like a golden curacy. Mm. Market town with a couple of villages. I had family nearby, extended family.
Yeah, my family nearby.
Yeah, I did.
Yeah, my auntie lived in Whitney for a while.
Yeah. I didn't see her nearly as much as I probably should have done. Sorry about that.
It's all right, she wasn't at church.
No. It was a really good time. I really valuable ministry, especially with schools and with the young people. I ended up setting up a youth group whilst I was there, and because there were kids growing up in the church, and they had enough for primary kids, but not anything for secondary, and that became just one of my most wonderful ministries, really.
That's the story of so many churches, isn't it? That they're great with, you know, young people and children, and then when it gets to the point that they're heading towards secondary school, that's the time that kids drop off, and people don't know how to handle teenagers and how to engage with teenagers.
And I think there are two sides to that, and I'm kind of exploring and seeing that in my new post here in Salisbury.
Yeah.
I think part of that is teenagers, to some extent, don't know who they are.
Yeah.
So there are times when they want to be the adult and treated like they're all grown up, but there are also times when they want to be a kid and just run around. And actually, there's sort of a two-brain thing going on in how they want to be treated. But I think as well, for a lot of adults who do grow up, there's a confusion. There can be the desire to control young people.
Yeah.
And actually, young people are not easily controlled.
Yeah.
In that sort of quite Victorian didactic way.
Sit down. Shut up. Do your worksheets.
I think it's a real gift as well. For some people, have a real gift of working with teenagers, and that's not a young person thing. You don't have to be young to work with young people. And we've got a great guy here at Salisbury Cathedral called Trevor, who I don't actually know how old he is, but he heads up the young servers. You know, he makes sure they know what they're doing, and he's the one who coordinates them.
Yeah,
and they've got a lot of love and respect for him because he loves and respects them.
Yeah.
And I think that's the key, love and respect, and especially with our generation and younger, responding to authenticity.
Absolutely, yeah. So important.
Anyway, that's a little bit of a tangent.
We knew we'd do it.
Yeah, we knew.
So you've kind of hinted at it through your story. And I'll leave it at that point where you've come to curacy and you've mentioned now that you're in Salisbury. But you've mentioned it through about your storytelling and how important storytelling has been for you. And can you explain a bit more about that? You know, why did you start telling stories?
My mum is a librarian. And when I was growing up, she was like an Usborne book seller.
Oh, really?
So I was surrounded by books growing up, and good books as well.
Oh, yeah.
And
especially Usborne.
You know, especially Usborne. So I think that's one part of it. I think there's something innate within me. I've got other writers in my blood. As it were, and especially theology writers. I've got a great granddad, I think, who wrote a book called God and the Nations, at about the time of the Second World War.
Oh, wow.
And then sharing his blood, I've got my mum's cousin, the late Rob Lacey, who wrote the Street Bible, The Word on the Street. So there's something about it in my blood, I think.
Yeah.
There's something about being surrounded by books growing up. And like when I think back, I can remember one of my earliest stories that I wrote on my parents' Acorn computer. It was about a family of golden Labradors who lived in heaven. But then they were thrown out of heaven by a baddie who is disguised as a tree. Because the logic is, the only way you could sneak up on a family of dogs is by being dressed as a tree.
Obviously, yeah.
And I could remember writing that, like, the grass was clouds and the flowers were diamonds and that kind of thing.
Wow.
And I remember that, you know, finding themselves on Earth, this family of dogs were like, well, we need to get back to heaven. How do we get back to heaven?
Oh, no.
So they... Yeah.
No!
And I remember... I never finished the story, But they were, there was a street, and it kind of, it was kind of like a street from Agrabah, from Aladdin.
Oh, yeah.
And at the end, far end of the street, they saw a sword. and they were going to go and get the sword, but then something got in the way. I think it was the tree creature distracted them or something. I don't know. I can't quite remember. But all of a sudden, the sword was gone. And I never finished the story because... I don't know. I'd never finish anything.
That's pretty dark, Ross.
It's pretty dark. But what you do have going on there is a young mind using story to work out theology.
Mm. All right, it's you can all put about it like that then.
Heaven and salvation and actually life and death. You know, so I always think of that. I remember that story because actually it feels like a template to everything that is to come.
Mm.
For most of my, between then and sort of university, most of what I wrote were your classic fantasy fairy tale.
Yeah.
Slightly science fiction, crazy stories, trying to be the next best-selling author.
Yeah.
There was a series I was writing called Fairyland.
Nice.
Like, how did I not know I was gay? I'm literally writing Fairyland. And then there was the Elemental Stones. That was a whole saga throughout my teenage years. And then when I started at university, a new sort of world called Crown and Glory. And that was all about fantasy, fairy tales.
There's a theme here.
There is a theme. There's a big theme. I dabbled in writing for television for fun and that kind of thing as well. Anyway, but then when I was at university, I think that's when my faith began to grow up. I had the faith that I received, but I was beginning to ask questions.
Mm.
And the way that I ended up resolving those questions was through writing. I wrote a play called You Judas, exploring what is salvation?
Yeah.
What does it mean for Jesus to die on the cross and come back 3 days later?
Yeah.
It was very successful in that people came and watched it and, you know, enjoyed it and were provoked by it. I did have some people from the Christian Union boycott it because I dared to suggest that Judas might be redeemable in
really?
It.
Really?
Yeah.
Goodness me.
And then actually off the back of that, and since then, I've done a lot of writing, with that slightly sort of Christian lens and imagination, fairy tales based on the Beatitudes was a big project through my 20s. I mean, I think they're finished, but I don't know what to do with them now.
Any publishers out there? Let us know.
Hello, publishers. More recently, yeah, in the last 5 years, writing Marianne Flowers, Drag Queen of Heaven, and exploring what it means for a queer person to have that call to priesthood and to follow that path into ordained ministry in the Church of England. So that's been really fun, and sometimes they've been shared with people, and they've been able to appreciate it or respond to it. Who knows what will happen with that? You know, I'm sort of in a new bit of life now, and maybe there's space for Beatitude fairy tales and Marianne Flowers. But where I am now, like I'm working on exciting projects here too for this ministry in Salisbury. So,
wrap everything up then, because we seem to be doing things in threes, I would like you to give people who are listening, because we know that some of you are exploring vocation and what you might be called to do, I'd like you to give three top tips if you are wondering about exploring ordination or what it might be that God's calling to do you to do. but also three top tips if you're interested in writing and you like telling stories. What would you recommend people do? You can start with either of those.
Thank you. Gosh, okay. I think with ordination, it is your time, I would say, to go at the pace that works best for you. The church can sometimes, as at an institutional level, slow things down or indeed want to speed things up.
Yeah.
But remember that it is your time with God. So don't rush if you feel like you're being rushed. Or if it feels like it's going quite quickly and you're chill with that, then go with that flow. The institution can be a pain, but try and own that time as best you can for you and God.
Yeah. That's good advice. I like that.
Relatedly, don't wait to be ready, because none of us ever are. And actually, so much of the process of discernment and training and indeed doing the job, or living the life of a priest.
Yeah.
We're never ready. And we're always in that process of being formed and being made ready. So, yeah, don't wait to feel like you're ready or worthy enough.
Yeah.
None of us ever are.
No. Good advice.
The third one is to be you. God is calling you. So don't try to pretend to be someone else. And I think relatedly, actually, you need to spend some time with you, being you. I think self-awareness is such a undervalued gift, but a really important one for anyone who is exploring ministry. And that's a lifelong project. if you're lucky to have a long life, you'll know yourself really well. But actually knowing yourself and getting to know yourself is a really valuable thing to do. And will set you up well. So those are three tips, I guess, for
ordination.
In terms of writing,
give us one big tip for writing.
Everyone will say write every day. I do not write every day. I write whenever something hits me, and then I will just churn something out. I'm just thinking of all the advice other writers give, like just finish your first draft as quickly as possible. The first draft is meant to be, it's meant to be edited. Some writers will say you need to read widely, and I've been a really bad reader recently. So what is my advice to anybody who wants to be a writer? Play. I think writing is playing. Play is a really important word for me, anyway, in terms of my who I am and how I relate to God. You're playing with characters. You're playing with worlds. You're playing God sometimes in the way that you are creating worlds. And so the things that you bring with you to play are the things that you bring with you to write.
I like that. That's nice. I like you too.
I tried to come up with something original.
Thanks for all of that, Ross. It's been lovely to hear stories that, some I've already heard, but to see you and talk to you again is wonderful. So thanks, friend. Love you.
It's been a nice hangout. Love you too.
We hope you've enjoyed this episode of The Vicars Watch Dibley. Thank you to Nat for editing our ramblings.
Any opinions expressed are our own and do not necessarily reflect the views of the Church of England or any other organisation with which we are affiliated.
If you like our podcast, leave us a review, follow us on social media and share it with your friends. And, as always, bless you for listening.
How do you get a Pikachu on the bus?
You Pokemon.
You Pokemon!
Classic.
It had to be.